This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas.
This recording is being made on Monday, December 19th. My name is Rick Wyman, and I have the pleasure of introducing Joan Curtis, a member of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church. Joan's story this afternoon relates to a tragic situation she experienced in her life and how her faith helped her get through that. So Joan, I appreciate you coming in and telling us your story. Let's just kind of start off about, you know, a simple question. What was the greatest gift you have ever given?
Without a doubt, the greatest gift I've ever been given is Jesus Christ and my faith, who has carried me through so many tragedies in my family. So that's it. And I can remember being in junior high and hearing Billy Graham speak, and I walked down, even though I was in the First Presbyterian Church, and I walked down and got a card that I felt like I was being called, and I didn't have the courage to go through with it at that age, but I look back now and think God was clearly speaking to me on that day.
That's special, absolutely special. How has your life been different than what you imagined? And maybe give us a little bit more about your background, where you grew up, and you know, like you said, what's been different than what you imagined?
Well, I grew up in Longview, Texas, to parents who were from South Louisiana, my mother from New Orleans, and my father from Oakdale, Louisiana. And my mother was always a stay-at-home mother, and I was very much like her. And so I grew up, my mother had five children, but I was one of four to be given the gift of growing up to an adult. And I really thought that's pretty much the life I want, just like my mother, because I loved kids. And so I really thought that that would be my life, that I would be happily married and go through struggles, that would be fine, and have children, and then we would grow old together. And that was exactly the way I envisioned my life. And that was the way it was until I was 43 years old. And then I clearly got the message, this is not the way your life is going to be after all.
So tell us what happened.
In December of 1993, Dennis, my husband, got sick, and we thought he had the flu. And at the moment, at that time, we were 43, and we had four healthy children. And we had made a decision. Things weren't going really well for him professionally, and he wanted to move to Northern Virginia to continue his business. And I agreed. I said, I think you're right. And the two older boys, Mark and Matthew, were kind of struggling here too. And I said, why don't you take them with you and help them get their feet on the ground? And they went to Virginia. And our daughter Alicia was away in college. And then I stayed home with the younger two. And we agreed that when things were up and going, that I would bring the younger two in the summer, assuming everything was up and going, because Dennis had had different kinds of occupations in his life. So they left in January, and in February, I guess Dennis had a relapse of the flu, and he just kept getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And so in March, he called me one morning. And I had started working at Good Shepherd Episcopal School, where John and Jenny went to school. And he called me one morning, and he could barely talk, and he just said he was sick. And I said, do you need me to come? And he said, yes, yes. And so I made a reservation. I flew to McLean, Virginia, and got there too late to get him to the doctor. But I took him the next morning, and he had pneumonia in both lungs. So they said, go right to the hospital, which we did. And I know that was on a Tuesday. And we're now in 1994. And on Wednesday, they came in and said they had thought maybe it was bacterial, but nothing, because it was so serious, but nothing was helping it get better. So then they wondered about viral, but it was too serious to be viral pneumonia. Could they test for HIV? And I inside laughed and thought, well, sure, you can test, but my word, we've been married for 23 years. So they did test, and on Wednesday night or Thursday morning, I get to the hospital, and the doctor comes in and says, we need to talk to Mr. Curtis alone. The nurse will escort you. So I walk out, and I'm thinking, oh, my word, he's got HIV. Why else would they want to talk to him alone? So it, you know, everything goes in slow motion in my head, but it was probably about 5 minutes, and they come back and get me and walk me in. And Dennis says, I have good news and I have bad news. Which do you want first? And I said, well, you know me, I want the bad news first because we're going to end on the good news. And he said, okay. Very matter-of-factly, Rick, he said, I have AIDS, and the good news is I am getting over the pneumonia. So in that moment, everything about my life changed in the way I saw the world. I have described it as my life stopped. And I had a writing coach tell me one time that my life hadn't stopped because obviously here I was. But what he didn't understand is life as I knew it had ceased to exist. And from that point forward, everything would be different.
Wow. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, where how things changed going forward and how you, you know, managed to cope with that situation.
Well, probably the first thing, they had to test me for HIV, giving me little hope that I would not be infected because he was already in full-blown AIDS and had been infected for 13 years without us knowing.
Wow.
So I can't tell you anything about Thursday to the next Monday when I got the call that I was negative. So clearly, God has called me to something different than what I thought my life would be. So things that have changed. I knew we all moved to Virginia, and I knew that the only way I could get through this without any family or friends there was to go to church. So I happened upon the First Presbyterian Church in Arlington, Virginia, and met, started going to a group of women. And the very first night, I said that I had just moved, and they asked me where I moved from, and I told them, and they said, what does your husband do? And I, all I said was, well, right now, my husband is ill, and so we're just coping with that right now. And the woman I was talking to said, I am so sorry, I lost my boyfriend to AIDS 5 years ago.
Oh, man.
And I just thought, oh, my word, God, you are talking to me through these people. So it was being in that church for the remainder of the time in Virginia, because it gave me something tangible to hold on to, and being with people who shared my faith. And in March of the next year, we knew that Dennis was not going to live much longer, and I knew that I could not get through this without family and friends, so we made the decision to move back to Dallas.
And that was when again?
That was March of 1995.
Okay. And so, how did you find Preston Hollow Presbyterian?
Well, Alice White has been instrumental in helping me through everything. And when I came back here before we moved, I honestly don't remember if Fane Downs was here then as an interim or Boo Ferrier, because they both served this church and were with me in times of upheaval.
Sure.
But when I came back here to pack to move us, I came to the church, and I think it was Fane Downs, who didn't know me from Adam. But I told her what I was struggling with, and she sat with me and cried. And I had just walked in off the street, so that said something to me right then. And the few people that I could tell that Dennis had AIDS, because I couldn't tell anyone to protect our children. Alice White was one of those people. And she and Joy Osborne helped find a house that we could rent when we moved back here. Rick and Joy Osborne took Dennis to the doctor for his first doctor's visit back in Dallas, because the day that he was going to have that appointment, our 16-year-old had an emergency appendectomy.
Wow.
When we moved back into our house, Ann Lorimer and Alice White painted the house that we had not let go of, painted the rooms for us. When Dennis died in July, this church fed us. The day we moved back into the house, the week after he died, they had, armies of people were helping us move. They had food. What I remember so clearly is Susan and John Roach. There were all these sodas that people had brought, but Susan and John Roach had brought water, bottled water, for people. Becky and Dave Neely, who are not members here anymore, but they were members, and that's how I know them. When Dennis was diagnosed, he had no health insurance or life insurance.
Wow.
So when he died, I was, I had my health, I had my children, and I had my house, and that was all I had. My house being the only financial part.
Sure.
So I needed a new refrigerator. And my sister talked to Becky and Dave Neely, and Becky and Dave just took me to town, literally, and said, pick out a refrigerator. It isn't that people were there holding my hand. People were actively getting tangible things to help us survive. Blair Money was going to be out of town. He had just begun here when Dennis died, and he had to be out of town. So he asked Cindy to come to Dennis's memorial. That's the day I met her. So it's just the people. We know that the church is the people, and the people in this church since 1975 have carried me through life, strengthening my faith every step of the way.
That's fantastic. That's a real testimonial for just how important this church has been to not just you, but of course others that they help. Do you have any, traditions to honor Dennis, or things that you do over the years since he's passed?
Well, this is what we're doing now, and my son John teaches high school at Denton High School, and he said to me, I was hired to teach on the day Dennis died. So there you go. God opened the window before he closed the door. And when I got a master's degree, and then I got a PhD, and my mother asked me not to move away when I got my PhD, so I started working for Denton ISD as a curriculum coordinator.
Okay.
And when I quit that job 2 years ago, just because I needed something else. Mm-hmm. I was talking to my son, John, about how my income had been reduced, and so Christmas would be a little smaller that year. And he said, you know, Mom, I've been thinking about Christmas gifts, and why do we have these adults, my adult children, who are all grown now with families.
Sure.
He said, why do we have these adults giving gifts to each other when none of us need anything? Why doesn't each family take $100 or $150, whatever that family feels like they can do, and we put that money together and give a scholarship in memory of Daddy to a high school senior? So last year, we did that, and 13 has been critical in this story that Dennis died on the 13th. I was hired to teach on the 13th of the month. The book that I wrote about this begins on page 13. Dennis dies in chapter 13. None of that was planned. It
wow.
just laid out.
That's a coincidence.
And so last year, a senior at Denton High School received a $1,300 scholarship in memory of Dennis Mark Curtis, and we're continuing that tradition.
That's fantastic. That's a really nice way to do that. And I know I have some friends that have kind of done something similar. It's a good way of giving gifts to people that really can not only utilize them, but really feel that it can make a difference in their life.
Exactly. And when you have, well, I'm an educator, John's an educator, so we are passionate about education. As I
Good
would tell
you.
My students, it won't guarantee you money, but it guarantees you options if you get that education.
So what, you've led a very interesting life, and of course you've gone through some very tough times with your husband. What's helped you most during the periods of grief, Joan? If you would mind sharing those with us, that would be really nice.
Prayer. Primarily, I think the strongest thing is just believing that I do. That it is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I see it in everything. If somebody says to me, but can you prove that there's God? My response is, oh my word, look around you. Do you think that's an accident?
Mm-hmm.
So just having that faith, but also believing as a part of that faith that people in my life, God has put those people in my life for a reason. And it's not just putting them in my life, but me in their lives too, so that we can build each other mm-hmm. and provide that, in education we called it scaffolding. So are you struggling here? Well, let me talk to you and pray with you and
sure.
share with you, and let's scaffold you back to where we both need to be. And clearly seeing my life as certainly it's my life, so it's about me. But if I really believe in the God that I say I believe in, I have to let my feet do the walking so that that my life is about serving others.
Mm-hmm.
And once I could get back to that and not think with my children that I had to make everything perfect for them to make up, when I finally realized that I couldn't make up for what had happened,
sure.
That then I could redirect my life and use it to serve others, like my students that I teach. Since my book has come out, people in this church, Rita Odom, Sharon Thomas, who has since moved, have asked me to come and speak to groups of women
mm-hmm.
about my story, and that's helped me. But I also know, because people have told me, that it's also helped them.
Through similar situations.
Through similar Exactly, through similar situations.
So you mentioned the book. So what that tell us a little bit about why you wrote it, and you know how long, and kind of what's happened since.
I think that I've always written, never thinking I would do anything with it, but I know that's a gift that God gave me. I don't have rhythm in dancing, but I have rhythm in words. And in education, you sit in groups of teachers, and people will say, this is why I went into education, this is why I went into education. Well, when people would ask me, the truth is I went into education because my husband died. And so when people would ask me, especially once I started working on my doctoral degree, people had started saying, you need to write this story. Because, Rick, if you saw me out there, I am a happy, positive, optimist. I say I'm an optimist dosed with reality. You'd never look at me and think that what had happened had happened to me.
I just met you, and I would absolutely agree with what you just said.
Thank you. Well, I started writing it because people encouraged me to, and then I thought, but I don't know that I'll do anything with it. But I was sitting in a group of teachers in my job in Denton ISD, and I was talking about how we can find common themes across texts, across books. And I read something, I read a little piece about kindness through the book Wonder by R.J. Palacio. And I'm just going to say right now, for anyone listening, if you haven't read that book, you need to read that book. Every human being needs to read that book. So
I'll make a note of that.
I had read about... it'd be a great Christmas gift or birthday gift for children, 5th, 6th grade, and the name of it is Wonder. Anyway, so I had read this little section about kindness, and then I went to my own book, which was just, you know, paper. It wasn't a book. And read about kindness when a student in summer school had stolen my wallet. And I over $200, and I mean, I didn't have any money. This was a huge thing. And one of the teachers, whom I didn't know, brought me $50 the next day, knowing that that wasn't $236 that had been stolen, but she just wanted me to know she cared, and she could afford to give me $50. And then several weeks later, I had taken my younger two children to Herrera's, thinking I had, I had $30, $35, the three of us could eat for 15, I'd have $20 left, it was Tuesday, and I would get paid on Friday, and I had milk and bread at home.
Wow.
You know, that's what I was doing. So we go to eat, we walk out, and a woman approaches me with her son and tells me that her husband has kicked her out of the house, and she has nothing, for her son or her to eat. And I thought, oh my word, I have $20, that's all I have. But that teacher gave me $50. I have milk and bread. I'm getting paid on Friday. She needs this $20 more than I do. So I gave her the $20.
Bless
and
you.
I just read this story.
Mm-hmm.
So at the break, one of the new teachers approaches me and says, Dr. Curtis, that's your story, isn't it? And I said, what? And she said, about having your money stolen and giving that $20 away. And I said, it is, but how did you know? Because she's new to the district.
Right.
And she said, because that's your voice in that writing. And I said, oh. And she said, Dr. Curtis, my husband has just left me. I'm getting food stamps right now. And I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm making a note. Kel, look at her. She has just given away her last $20, but look at her now. Note to self. It is awful right now, but you are not going to stay in this place, Kel. You are going to do exactly what she's done. Look at her, Kel. That's where you're going. And she said, Dr. Curtis, I don't know if you're going to do anything with that story, but you need to do something with that story. And that was the decision. It took me 9 years to be able to articulate grief the way I felt it.
Wow. How long did it take you to write the book? And
it took me 9 years.
Okay.
Where I would tell stories, and finally I wove the stories together so that it was one narrative. And then I did send it, to different publishers, and I finally found Hugo House, just a small publisher out of Colorado, and they published it.
Super. Well, I definitely want to get a copy of that.
So,
that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, is there anything else, Joan? I mean, this story is fabulous, and obviously we are so blessed to have you as a member of Preston Hollow Presbyterian, and the story of how your faith helped you not only survive, but to understand your life and what you needed to do to help others. And you truly have helped others through similar situations, and bless you for that.
Well, thank you. The one thing I want to say, Rick, is before my husband died, how critical, when I joined this church, I can remember walking down the hall and meeting Virginia Holloway, who said, hello, Joan. And I thought, oh, my word, somebody knows my name. From the very beginning, that let me know I had a place in this church. And it was that same year that Rita Odom asked me if I would teach Sunday school. And I've laughed and said, that's before I knew that if you walked and breathed, they'd ask you to teach Sunday school. But I was honored,
sure,
like that she thought I knew something and had something to share. So those two people from, I want to say from year one, let me know that I had a place in this church and I was important in the life of this church. And it was later that I met Alice White, and my brother was critically brain damaged in a car accident in 1981, and Alice White was just right there, as was Ann Lorimer, reminding me of the loss of her own parents, and so to think about my parents and not think about myself in this. And then 15 months after my brother died, my father died, and so there, this church, the people here are just right here carrying me. I've laughed. When I was 29, we were at a women's conference at Mo Ranch, and Alice White was telling the story of losing her father at 19, and I know that I was 29, and we're all crying. And I said, gosh, I feel so guilty. I feel like my life has just been, a fairy tale. And you all have all struggled. And that was in the summer. And it was the next March that my brother had his car accident. Mm. And Alice and I have laughed all these years saying that it was for me to say, oh, everything's been so perfect. I was saying, okay, God, here I am. Now give me the challenges to get me through.
And he certainly has, but you have absolutely overcome them with flying colors.
Well, and I have no doubt that the reason I have is that God led me to this church in 1975.
Well, that's to PHPC's gain, and certainly having you as a member. And thank you for sharing this wonderful story, and not just about you and your dealing with grief and how you've overcome it through your faith, but it's a very meaningful remembrances of, other members of Preston Hollow Presbyterian and how they helped you through those periods. And that's just the kind of information and stories we want to hear as part of this Booth initiative. So
thank you
again. This was just fantastic, and we are truly blessed to have you as a member.
Well, I am truly blessed to be here, and thank you, Rick, for giving me this opportunity.
You're more than welcome. Bless you.
Bless you.
This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. For more information about The Booth, visit www.phpc.org.